Call this meeting to order at, I have 16 after, is that what you have? 16 after? 10 o'clock this morning. Today is Thursday, February 16th. We're joined by Representative Carrick, Representative Wright, Representative Prox, Representative McKay, myself, Chair Rauscher, and, in the room, we have Representative Bryce Edgman. So I'd like to thank the recording secretary today, Jordan Wright, and our LAO moderator, LAO moderator Zach Lawhorn, for all that you guys do for us in this committee. I appreciate it very much. So before we begin, I want to remind everybody to... silence your cell phones and any other personal electronics that you may have on you. Hold, if there's a slideshow, at least hold your questions till after each slide. I'd just like to remind all the members to direct your questions through the chair and, vice versa for those that are testifying. Today we'll be taking up House Bill Number 62, Renewable Energy Grant Fund, by Representative Edgman, and we will also be taking public comment today. So, Representative Edgman, if you'd like to come forward, put yourself on record, and then you can begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bryce Edgman, Representative for House District 37, the southwest part of the state. With me is my staff, Labe Allensworth, who I will be turning the more technical questions to. But I really appreciate your and the committee scheduling this bill early on. It's a bill that nearly made it through the process last year, a bill that would simply just re-up or reauthorize the Renewable Energy Grant Fund for a 10-year period. Bill nearly made it through last year, but I think given the fact that it was an imperative to get it through last year, it made it almost all the way through the Senate side, passed the House, and fell just a little bit short in the waning days. But the Renewable Energy Grant Fund program was a program that was started up in 2008, and that's back when oil prices were $148 a barrel. I think it was 2007 when oil crested at its all-time high, and the amount of money that was coming into Alaska was just unprecedented. Many billions over, we were able to put a lot of money into savings, fund a lot of things and whatnot. But the vision at that point was to begin capitalizing renewable energy program, focus on weatherization, focus on other issues that could sort of help Alaska transition into, more developing more of our natural resources, which, at first blush, bring to mind oil and fisheries and tourism and things like that, but renewable energy is a natural resource, right, that we still are working to develop. So it's interesting, the first year that this program was developed, and it dates back to 2008, and then Speaker John Harris, and followed up by Bill Williams, who's the co-chair of finance, Bill Thomas, pardon me. But the first year, we capitalized this fund at $100 million. And there's a gentleman in the back who remembers that as well, who represents utilities, and so here we are all these years later after the bill was established in 2008 and then getting a 10-year extension in 2012, but proposing the bill in front of you, House Bill 62, to extend it out for another 10-year period. And you might ask, well, why are we proposing 10 years and maybe not the more conventional 3 years or 5 years or whatever it might be for other programs? We would propose that the track record for this program substantiates the longer period of time for its existence, of course, to be reauthorized in the future, and that in order to really empower communities, tribes, whatever entities are involved in renewable energy projects, we need a long lead time. I guess I would close by saying that the grant program is more tailored towards providing, mostly municipalities, but also other entities that tribes, like I mentioned a moment ago, but with money to do the upfront the feasibility analysis, to do the sort of the design stage before one would actually get involved into a renewable project, which, you know, depending on the source of the project, could have, you know, maybe questionable economics tied to it or what have you. So that's the intent of this fund, as best as I can describe it. Maybe Mr. Thayer online would want to provide more detail and so forth. But a little bit of backdrop on the program. I've rambled for quite a bit here, but trying to, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, create sort of the backdrop to why we're here with this bill and why we think it's important to, you know, to seriously consider it.
Thank you. Before we go to, you're probably going to do a sectional?
Yes. Or,
okay. Before we do that, I just want to, for the record, we have Representative Shragi, Representative Pakitaku came in during the opening of that of the bill here. So if you'd like to put yourself on a record there, and you can have the floor.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Leigh Valensworth, staff representative Edgman, and I'd like to thank the committee for taking the time to hear this bill as well. I'd be happy to walk you through the sectional. It's a short bill and short sectional, and if you'd like, I can provide you a little bit more background on the fund and its history, if you'd like. So I'll start off with the sectional.
Sure. Thank you.
So the bill only has three sections. They're fairly simple. The first section amends chapter law, or section 5, chapter 13 of session law 2008. It essentially just extends, this is the extension of the repeal date. That the repeal date is currently set for 2023, June 30th. This would extend it to June 30th, 2033. Section 2 is a retroactive, makes the bill retroactive. If this bill takes longer to pass and goes past that date of June 30th, 2023, and then this bill is passed after that, it would go back and make this, give the authorization of the fund, past that. And then Section 3 just, is the effective date clause. It's an immediate effective date clause.
All right. Thank you. Do you have anything more?
If you'd like, I can provide a little bit more about the background, the history of the fund and the program itself. I believe Mr. Thayer is online. He might be able to answer more technical questions about the application process, but I'd be happy to provide a brief overview.
Yeah, if you want to, before we let these guys have their questions, you might be able to answer some ahead of time for them.
Absolutely. As the representative previously mentioned, the fund was established in 2008 and received a 10-year extension in 2012. Both times it passed the bodies unanimously. It has delivered over $299 million statewide from in grant funds, capturing hundreds of millions of dollars in matching funds, both federal and local. There is a rigorous application process that is competitive to vet projects for their technical and financial feasibility before they are recommended to the legislature. The legislature then makes the final determination on funding. In the past, when this bill was first established, there was $100 million that was appropriated to it, and then $50 million in total appropriated to it in the next 2 years. After that, there's appropriations of between 20 and 30 million until about 2015. And in 2015, there was about 11 million appropriated. And then, in reflection to the state's fiscal situation, and this is reflective of the fund's awareness of the state's fiscal situation, there were no recommendations brought forth between 2016 and 2018. No appropriations until 2018, when another $11 million was appropriated, and then again a pause of recommendations until 2021, where $4 million was appropriated, and then another round of funding last year when $15 million was appropriated for round 14. This year, the governor, through his amended budget, has proposed $7.5 million for funding of these grants. which is roughly half of what last year's project was, last year's request was. I would also like to point out that there's a fiscal note attached to this bill for $1.4 million that is for the continued maintenance and support of current grants and the fund. That $1.4 million has also been included in the governor's budget. I'd like to close by reiterating that this bill does not obligate the future funding of any recommendations. Those recommendations are brought before the legislature and decided on funding then. This bill would simply allow the fund and program to continue to provide support to existing grants and bring future recommendations forward. With that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions, and I'd like to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I was wondering if you could give us a – was there anything left over from last year?
Can I, Mr. Chairman, add one point?
Yeah.
In reference to actually funding the Renewable Energy Grant Program itself, the legislature in 2016 passed a bill that amended the PC Endowment Program to create what's called a waterfall sort of program where in high-earning years from the PC Endowment, which had been capitalized and actually increased in value to over $1 billion at the high-water mark, it's now retrenched, and last I saw was $969 million, given the poor market performance of calendar year 2022. But anyway, the bill that the legislature passed in 2016 said from those excess earnings, surplus earnings from the PC Endowment, we'll first fund the annual PC outlay, which is anywhere from the mid-30s to the high 40s, depending on prices. Then we will fund a community assistance program. And then the third tranche, should there be the money for it, will be renewable energy grant programs. And we're now in round 15 of the renewable energy grant cycle. Round 14 was funded at $15 million from those surplus earnings from the PC endowment. But again, because the endowment itself has kind of gone backwards a little bit, the money that the governor is proposing, the $7.5 million that Leib just mentioned, is separate. That'll be a UGF appropriation through the governor's amendments to his FY24 operating budget.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Representative, have you had a question?
Yeah, so just to clarify, Leib and Representative Edgman, you said $7.5 million in the amended budget. In addition to the $1.4 million that's listed in the fiscal note, or is $1.4 million inside of that $7.5 million?
The $7.5, I believe, is in addition to the $1.4 already included.
Yeah, through the chair, the $1.4 was in the governor's FY24 budget that came out on December 15th. Okay.
Anybody else have a question? Representative Prax.
Well, first, a comment. I think it's important for everyone that lives along the rail belt to understand that the Power Cost Equalization Fund was The Power Cost Equalization Fund was created in addition to the money that went for the intertie way, way back, long time ago. So we have to keep that in mind when we think about the Power Cost Equalization and that fund. Mm-hmm. But question, is there some sort of a history, hopefully there is, if there's an investment in alternative energy somewhere, in particular out in the rural areas where fuel cost is so high, is there some sort of a history of we invested this amount, we've reduced the cost by X amount, and we got some sort of return on investment?
Through the chair, I believe that the AEA.
Can you identify yourself for your answer, of course.
For the record, Leigh Ballinsworth. Through the chair, Representative Prox, I believe that the AEA does have might be able to present that information of the offset of diesel costs and that offset of lowering those power costs in rural areas.
Uh-huh. Representative?
Yes, through Representative Edgman, to add on to Mr. Allensworth's comments, I've been involved with this program for a number of years, and I was actually on the what's called the REFAC committee. That's now getting reappointed. But AEA and Mr. Thayer will certainly be able to speak in more detail to it. But in the past, has provided a very detailed spreadsheet that shows down to the amount of gallons of diesel that have been saved by these projects. And again, going back to the fact that the grant program itself sort of starts the projects through the design and feasibility component and then the development stage, you know, that might sort of be into the future. But they do, in short, you know, have quantified analysis of the savings that this money actually generates, you know, with projects.
Nice. Representative, a follow-up? Representative Fox?
No, I'll wait.
So, any other representative Shragi?
Thank you, through the chair. So I just wanted to ask a little bit about the funding for the Renewable Energy Fund, and I know it was mentioned, and sorry if this has already been covered. I know I came in just a few minutes late. My apologies for that. But it started in 2008, and I read here this AEA handout that the original plan was to appropriate $50 million every year for 5 years. And I think when you were running through the history, it sounds like we did that for the first three, and then we maybe didn't quite do the 50. There were some other amounts listed. So did we ever actually put in the full 5 years of $50 million? And then I guess as a follow-up question to that, what is the health of the fund? I know in 2016 we started the PCE waterfall was just mentioned. I also heard a couple other direct appropriations into the fund in the last 5 years or so. But can you speak just generally to the health of the fund and whether or not more investment would be helpful?
For the record, Leigh Balanceworth, through the chair of Representative Shragi, it seems that from the numbers that I have between 2008 and 2014, there was about $20 and $30 million appropriated each year. It's not quite that $50 million that was proposed, but it was a healthy contributions to the fund throughout those years until the state ran into the fiscal situation that it did in 2016. As far as the health of the fund, the fund has been pretty good about redelivering the money that is appropriated to them back out to grants. So future appropriations are always appreciated. Mr. Thayer might be able to speak more to what the current state of the fund levels are, but the $15 million that was appropriated to the fund last year did go directly out to completely fund round 14.
Representative Shragi, follow up?
No.
Good. Representative Puktak.
I think we should take Leib up on his offer to have Mr. Thayer speak to the health of the fund if Mr. Thayer's online, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Were you happy with your reply?
I would appreciate more information.
Yeah.
Maybe we could ask Mr. Who's it online?
It should be Curtis Thayer.
Curtis Thayer. Mr. Thayer, are you online?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, it's Curtis Thayer. Executive Director of Alaska Energy Authority, and I have Connor Erickson, the Manager of Planning, who actually oversees the Renewable Energy Fund. Do you want me to tackle that question, or do you want to rephrase and start new with questions?
Representative, go ahead. Do you want to rephrase it, or do you just want to?
Yeah, I guess I'm just, through the chair, curious as to the health of the fund and the ability to maintain the current level of funding that we've been able to do over the last few years. Is more investment needed, or can you just speak to the balances maybe over the last few years and whether they've been declining? Or if you could speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Thayer?
Okay, through the chair, the fund you're referring to is the PCE Endowment?
Renewable Energy Fund.
Okay, thank you. As far as through the chair, the Renewable Energy Fund, there is not necessarily a fund balance because as the legislature appropriates money for identified projects, that money is then expended on those projects. So what we did do is, and we, you know, as was previously discussed, there was a time in the desert where money was not available for the program, And our first round 13, which was approximately 18 months ago, 2 years ago, we took $4.7 million of projects that had already been previously approved by the legislature, but for whatever reason came in under budget or were canceled, and we asked for a reappropriation of those funds to put those out is what we call round 13, which was $4.7 million for 11 projects. Last year, the legislature appropriated $15 million at the governor's request, and that funded 27 projects that are currently ongoing. So currently, we have 38 projects that we have ongoing with the existing funds the legislature appropriated during the last 2 years, and we have 5 holdover projects from the original, from the past. So we have 44 active projects, but there's not a fund or a balance. What we would do is when we have round 15, we'll be presenting that to the legislature in March. And at that time, we will have a conversation. Right now, we have 31 projects being asked for that are currently in the evaluation stage for a total of $33 million. We anticipate that number of applicants to go down once we go through the evaluation process. But we literally live one appropriation to the next in relationship to the Renewable Energy Fund.
Thank you. That's extremely helpful through the chair. So unlike TCE or the permanent fund, it's not earning a yield that then is flowing through to fund various appropriations or projects. In this case, it's really just a holdover account that's then used to award funds towards these projects through the various rounds. So in that case, if I follow up, if I could, Chair Rauscher. So since originally it was intended about $50 million a year would flow through into the renewable energy projects, and we ran into some financial troubles and went to the PCE waterfall method with some other direct appropriations, can you give me an average as to how much has been flowing out over, say, the last 5 rounds, just to get an idea as to how much in recent history has been flowing through out of the REF?
Right. Through the chair, the last 5 years is really the $19.7 million that has been given in the last 2 years. There was a period of time where the legislature and due to the financial condition of the state put no money into the Renewable Energy Fund and it sat dormant. And it is only when we asked for the 4.7 reappropriation from other projects that had not gone forward, and then we had a fresh appropriation, shall we say, for the first time in 5 or 6 years, and that was the $15 million from last year.
And that comment was from Curtis Thayer. That's
right.
All right.
Thank you, Chair.
By the way, online we have Matt Jackson, Climate Program Manager, Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. We also have Michael Rovito, Deputy Director, Alaska Power Association, and Gary Henney, City Administrator of City of King Cove online. Were any of those going to testify for you today, Representative?
Through the chair, Leigh Ballinsworth, I believe those are public testifiers.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Apologies. Thank you. So do you have anything more? Does any more questions, Representative Prox?
Well, just a follow-up to Rep. Charvey's question. I think the health of the underlying fund, Power Cost Equalization Fund. I believe that's what Representative Edgman referred to, took a dive last year. What is the outlook going forward for the Power Cost Equalization Fund?
Mr. Thayer?
Through the chair, this is Curtis Thayer with AEA. The Power Cost Equalization Fund has owned, just for a point of record, of the approximately 11 appropriations that have gone into the Renewable Energy Fund, only 2 years have been funded with PCE endowment earnings, excess earnings. And the first year and last year being the second time that had happened, and that was for $15 million is what it was able to do. The fund in the preceding 2 years, which is where we pull it from, there was $155 million the fund earned. of which the first $30 million, this is the PC endowment, the first $30 million roughly goes to the Power Cost Equalization Program, then $30 million goes to community assistance, and then therefore is the cascading waterfall, and there are three areas the money could be spent for, and that is power cost equal, I mean, for renewable, for the Renewable Energy Fund, bulk fuel loans, or for powerhouses. So there's three options there. In last year's budget, $15 million was put for the PC or for the Renewable Energy Fund. This year, the earnings of the endowment lost $112 million. It's managed by the Department of Revenue. It's on a three-year average. That only allows for approximately $55 million to be used for PCE and community assistance. And therefore, this year, there is no money out of the Power Cost Equalization Fund to fund the renewable energy. Traditionally, 9 of the 11 times, it has been out of general fund earnings. One year, actually, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation used that dividend that was given by the Alaska Housing Finance was actually the fund source one year for the Renewable Energy Fund. So the PCE is a mechanism, the PCE endowment is a mechanism in those years where there's earnings to support the PCE program, but 9 of the last, like I said, 11 years has been from the general fund or another designated fund. And this year, the governor is asking that it be out of UGF. And there's a placeholder of $7.5 million in there because, again, we're going through an evaluation process of 31 projects for a potential ask of $33 million. Not saying the legislature is going to fund $33 million. That's just the ask that we have on the table as we are going through the economic analysis and technical and feasibility analysis of the request.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, follow up. You okay?
I'll let some other.
In the order I saw them, Representative Puckett.
Yes, for a follow-up.
You have a follow-up? Representative Puckett?
To just what Mr. Thayer just said. I guess the question then, we should talk to the Department of Revenue if we have questions about the anticipated future earnings of the Power Cost Equalization Fund. That's a Department of Revenue question. Is that correct?
Representative Cross, thank you. And that's Mr. Thayer?
Through the chair, this is Curtis Thayer with AEA. That is correct. They do manage the funds for AEA or for the endowment. Yes.
And a comment from Representative Edgman.
Yes, for the record, Representative Edgman, you might remember, Mr. Chairman, and those of you who were here last year, that we passed a bill, Senate Bill 243, that did a couple of things. Relative to the Power Cost Equalization Program, it increased the residential rate per household, the cap from 500 kilowatt hours to 750 kilowatt hours, which meant that the annual outlay from the PC program got bigger, not smaller, in terms of that cascading waterfall effect. But the second thing it did is it sort of freed up the fund from being managed as a long-term endowment, low return, low risk, sort of a CBR-like, constitutional budget return-like. I can't remember if it was 4% or 5% return rate prior to us passing Senate Bill 243 last year. But what 243 did is it said, we've got this fund that's built up to about $1 billion. We're in the midst of 30% market returns for the permanent fund and whatnot. Let's free up the PC endowment and let's allow it to be managed under the prudent investor rule to where you could have more risk, but you have more returns. And lo and behold, we picked the wrong year kind of to do that because things went south last year in the market, as we all have saw. So that's why the retrenchment occurred in the PC, or the large part of it anyway. From it was, I think, about $1.1 billion in value, all the way back to, like Director Thayer was saying, to last report I saw was about $970 million.
Thank you. Senator Fox?
Thank you. I'm guessing that the future returns are going to be better than last year's returns. I'll check with DOR.
Representative Puckett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to the round 15, looking at the summary here, 31 projects you mentioned, obviously they're going to go under some sort of review process. Can you briefly describe what things you take into consideration when it comes to that review process, Mr. Thayer?
Through the chair, Curtis Thayer for AEA, I will actually ask Connor, who manages the program, as he's responsible for the review process and the details in that.
Follow up?
I think he's pitching to somebody named Connor.
Yep. For the record, this is Connor Erickson with AEA, through the chair. Response to your question. So the REST is comprised of a four-stage evaluation process. So initially there's, once the RFA deadline has passed and the applications are received, we go through a review of all the applications, looking at, you know, the eligibility of both the applicant and the project, as well as the completeness of the application, and whether or not they've been properly authorized and certified by the applicant, you know, for instance, like through resolutions and other similar documents. And then it goes on, those that pass that review stage are then go on to stage two, which is a much more in-depth review, looking at the economic and technical feasibility of the projects, whereby we go out and run a competitive bid, solicit, review by a contracted economist to go and run some economic cost-benefit analyses for the various applications. We also have internally folks here within AEA that review the technical feasibility of those projects. And then those projects that advance on from stage two go on to stage three, which looks more at the kind of more financial review, looking at potential matching funds that are offered up by the applicants, and looking at also the cost of energy for the particular projects. And so then, therefore, from there becomes a ranking of the projects. And then those that, you know, pass stage three go before stage four, which is essentially a presentation and a ranking of all those projects, which is then presented to the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee, which is comprised of four legislators and five other members of the public. And then from there, you know, once we confer with the committee, then we forward those recommendations on to the legislature for their consideration. And again, this, you know, the fund doesn't necessarily does not obligate any funding of the program.
Representative Shaggy, and then Representative Carey.
Yeah, just so I just wanted to clarify what I had heard a little bit ago or thought I heard. So potentially $30 million in proposed projects that might kind of make the cut and be forwarded to the legislature. And I think I heard that hadn't been decided yet, but is that approximately the number I heard? Because I think the $7.5 million that's proposed as an appropriation would cover, I think, just barely 20% of those, $33 million, according to Rep. McKay. Could I get some clarity on that?
Yeah, through the chair, this is Curtis Thayer with AEA. We currently have 31 proposals for a total of $33 million. They're currently in phase two. And so as we go through phase two and three, which is the economic analysis and technical feasibility, we will assume that some of those numbers, some of those candidates will drop off, some of those applications will drop out, as well as be reduced. And then we will take it to the advisory committee, which five members of the public, four legislators sit on it, and present to them, and based on that, we will come and have a better idea of what that number is. The governor's number in the budget of the 7.5 is, I would say, a placeholder to determine where we are, and in March, and by mid-March, we will have those recommendations for the legislature. And in some cases, the legislature, we have presented funding requests to the legislature going through rounds, and the legislature has not funded any requests, and they've given us zero, even though we had a funding request in there. So it doesn't necessarily match the 33 to the 7.5. Again, it's at the discretion of the legislature, but we're going to be able to give you better numbers as we enter into phase two, three, and four of the evaluation process.
And just one more follow-up, if I could. Probably a crude number, but could you give me an estimate as to historically when you go from round two to round four? I mean, do you typically see 50% of the total funding requests drop off, or is there any way I can ballpark what that might look like in March?
Mr. Thayer?
Through the chair, that's very hard to do when you look. In previous rounds, we have always had more funds. We have had more applicants for more money than what the legislature has been able to fund. So I can't tell you what, if that 31 turns to 15. I can't tell you that because each project is awarded different funds. They have a different funding requirement or request in there. We do cap it at $2 million and then four for an overall project. So there's some internal caps that hold that cost down. But again, we've always had requests for funds greater than the legislature has been able to provide since the inception of the program, which I think is probably no different than any other program that you deal with during the appropriation process.
Thank you.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Chair Rauscher. And through the chair, Representative Shragi actually just asked the two questions I had. But since I have a chance with a microphone, I will kind of follow up. So if there's greater demand and projects that meet the requirements and get through those early phases than what the legislature has funded previously, I'm just curious what a pie in the sky number is for AEA on, you know, if the legislature had endless money to give towards renewable energy, what is kind of the projects that have made it through previously and the dollar amounts associated? Do you have like a pie in the sky number for if the legislature did have all the money and we could fund all the viable projects that make it through the rounds, what that might look like?
Through the chair, Curtis Chair with AEA, that I don't have. There's a lot of renewable projects, and the purpose of this fund is to help with the feasibility and the early development of those projects. Some of the projects have had great success. Halungnai down on the Prince of Wales Island has actually turned that into almost 100% renewable, the island, and it started with a rough project. We have wind farms, we have solar, we have we've had some hydro projects. I know Gary is on from King Cove. They received money from the REF program for their hydro project, which has helped lower the cost in their community. So across the state, it's been beneficial. The one thing that I would encourage on the extension of this program is it looks that we could possibly parlay some of the investment of the state with the infrastructure bill. There might be some avenues in which this program would be complementary to some federal programs that even possibly could help support the Renewable Energy Fund. But again, that's just early by our looking at the application. They are competitive, but we might be, because of the forethought of the legislature in the past and the governor, the previous governors to support this program, there's a possibility that we might get funding on a federal level to grow the program. But again, that's probably a year or more away.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thayer. And before we go any more questions, I just want to go to some public comments first, because we're going to be running short on time, and we said we'd go through a public comment process. So if you'll save your questions, write them down, and you might even have another one. So right now I'm going to open up public comment in the room. And anybody like, sir, come on up forward and you can testify. Put your name on record. And I'm not going to hold everybody. We only have five or six people to 2 minutes, but I appreciate if you kept it short for the community's time.
Thank you, Chair Rauscher. My name is Doug Woodby. I'm with 350 Juneau Climate Action for Alaska, and I'm here to strongly support continuation of the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. It's been a very useful, important fund for rural communities to help save money for various public entities such as municipalities and schools to save on their utility bills. And there's also a significant part of this effort to save on carbon emissions, which I think is something we're all aware of, and it's important to get our energy, our renewable energy transition accelerated as fast as we can. And 350 Juno is primarily a climate-related group, but we're also very concerned about a lot of the frontline communities that are mostly affected by the climate crisis. And I think a lot of our rural communities, especially on the North Slope, Western Alaska, would benefit greatly from this opportunity to save on their energy bills and have a sustainable energy source through these funds that help fund the initial stages of projects. So I appreciate what you're doing here, and I'm hoping to see this renewed for 10 years with the maximum amount of funding allocated for each year. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your comment. Is anybody else in the room want to comment? I see none. I'm going to close comments in the room, and I'm going to open up commenting online. We have, firstly, we have Matt Jackson, Climate Program Manager Southeast in Sitka from the Alaska Conservation Council. Matt, would you like to put your name on record? And you could begin your testimony if you can hear us.
Thank you, through the chair. This is Matthew Jackson, climate manager at Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, and also work closely with the folks from around the state and the Alaska Climate Alliance, who we met with most of you a couple of weeks past. There's been really great discussion and questions from the committee. Thank you for this hearing and for the opportunity to comment. Two things I want to add to the record is that AEA estimates that this project saves 30 million gallons of diesel per year. That is a massive cost savings if we just assume $6 a gallon for diesel, which is probably a conservative estimate for a lot of rural districts. That's $180 million saved on diesel in 1 year alone. And I think that's a pretty good return on investment and shows that this is a worthy fund for the state to invest public money in. And in response to the magic number, you know, the gaps in funding have certainly had a chilling effect on applications to the fund. And I think if the fund were to be funded, you know, more consistently, you would see far more interest than the $33 million that we're able to get an application in for this round. And so I would strongly encourage this committee, in addition to extending it for another 10 years and providing that 10 years of predictability, that the legislature also fund it to a level similar to the $50 million a year that it was originally envisioned for. The demand and the need for affordable renewable energy projects across Alaska would certainly meet that level. And so I encourage you to both extend and to fully fund this program. Thank you for this great discussion and the opportunity to testify. That's all.
Well, Matt, we appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. Next, we have Michael Rivito, Deputy Director, Alaska Power Association. Michael, can you hear us?
Yes, I hear you, Mr. Chairman.
The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Rivito. I'm the Deputy Director of Alaska Power Association, or APA. APA is a statewide trade association for electric utilities in Alaska, and our members provide power throughout the state, some of the most remote and harshest conditions in the country. APA fully supports House Bill 62 and the extension of the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and we strongly urge quick passage of the bill. We would also like to thank Representative Edgman for sponsoring this legislation. APA is speaking on behalf of our electric utility members with our support for HB 62. Many of APA's electric utility members have received crucial funding from the Renewable Energy Fund since its inception. These funds have supported the addition of renewable energy projects that have diversified generation portfolios, helped to stabilize rates, and decrease the carbon footprint of electric generation. The valuable financial assistance of the Renewable Energy Fund cannot be overstated. By providing grant funding for projects, the program helps alleviate project costs to ratepayers while increasing clean energy generation in the state. There are also numerous projects, as you've heard, under consideration for future rounds of grant funding from the fund. And these projects, as past projects have, will be chosen through a deliberative process run by the Alaska Energy Authority and reviewed by the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee. Finally, by extending the sunset date of the program, electric utilities in Alaska will have certainty that the Renewable Energy Fund will be there as they continue innovating the power systems of the state. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and the committee, and this concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Vito. I appreciate it. Next we have online is Gary, and Gary, I'm going to have to apologize for tripping over your name. First time I'm taking another crack at it, Gary Hennig, is that right? Did I pronounce it correct? And are you online? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can, and that's pretty close, Chairman Rauscher. So good morning to you and members of the House Energy Committee. My name is Gary Hennig, and I am in my 33rd year as city administrator with the city of King Cove. And I would like to briefly summarize the written testimony that we've already provided in support of passing House Bill 62. During my three decades of working for King Cove, I have been the hands-on facilitator developing and guiding the operations of our two run-of-the-river hydro facilities that have made King Cove one of the premier renewable energy communities in rural Alaska. Since 1994, the city has been 50% renewable, and then when our second hydro facility came online in 2017, we have been at least 90% renewable. The city is pleased to testify in support of extending the Renewable Energy Grant Fund program. We applaud Representative Edgman for sponsoring the bill. Representative Edgman has been a longtime champion and supporter of King Cove's renewable energy accomplishments in his House District 37. The renewable energy program must continue. Our city's municipal utility significantly benefited from the Renewable Energy Fund being a key funding component for the development of our second hydro facility back in 2015 and 17. Two Renewable Energy Fund grants totaling $2.8 million were very instrumental in funding this $6.5 million project. Without this REF funding, it is unlikely the city could not have afforded to construct this second facility. Along the way, the city has learned some valuable information, though, regarding the REF process that I want to share. It is very important to continue allowing the Renewable Energy Fund program to be selected, the projects to be selected and prioritized using the established criteria and priorities that the Alaska Energy Authority has previously established. They are good criteria and they do work well. King Cove is also experiencing a significant disconnect between the Renewable Energy Fund program and the Power Cost Equalization Program. And unfortunately, we learned that this disincentive that we have with this disconnect is something that we learned after we moved forward with Waterfall Creek. And what I'm referring to here is that King Cove does not receive a PCE subsidy. Our frustration is that the majority of the 190 communities that receive the PCE subsidy are able to have cheaper residential costs for the first 750 kWs than what King Cove can currently offer our residents. With our more than $3 million investment in Waterfall Creek and not seeing any positive impact on the PCE program, we simply feel this is unfair to us. We are urging the legislature to address this particular situation. The Alaska Energy Authority has not been willing to engage in this situation and continually says we must deal with the legislature and not them. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on this very important renewable energy matter.
Mr. Hennig, I appreciate it. I just want to say that I don't know if you remember or if you were around then, but I believe it was your first hydro project. I came to King Cove and I helped build a powerhouse for that, along with Dave Wentz. And then I moved on and we worked on the clinic there when we brought the clinic there. And then the high school. I started working on the high school project with you, and in between I was working for Peter Pan. So I do appreciate your hydro projects. I'm glad to see you continued on and built another one, and I'm glad to hear that it's 90% of your renewable energy there. So 90% of your power, right, with renewables. Appreciate it again, and thank you again. Anybody have any comments for any of the people that have just testified? For those that testified, Mr. Fox?
Well, we can save it to the end, I suppose, if we're, are we getting ready to close?
I'm gonna close the testimony for the, those are all I have online.
Okay.
Is that fine?
Yep, closing the testimony is fine. Are we then?
I'm gonna close testimony of those online, and we're back here in the room with questions. Go ahead, Mr. Box.
For the last, I think for Mr. Thayer, somebody, investing in these projects does reduce the cost to the state of the power cost equalization program. And is there some sort of arithmetic that might let us know we invest X amount, we get that much cost avoidance in PCE?
Through the chair, I apologize. My phone, the phone is getting unmuted and muted, and I didn't hear the full question.
Oh, sorry.
Representative, go ahead and repeat, please.
Through the chair, does the Alaska Energy Authority or somebody have some calculation that they could give us on the return on investment is cost avoidance in the power cost equalization program from the state's perspective? Has somebody quantified that?
Mr. Thayer, that was from Representative Prox, and you have the you can have the floor.
All right, thank you. And through the chair, Curtis there with AEA. I would like to work with Representative Prox offline, because the power cost, the reason, well, the power cost equalization program and the Renewable Energy Fund serve different, they serve the same in some PCE communities. 85% of the funds of the Renewable Energy Fund find themselves to rural Alaska, but 15% of it finds it on urban Alaska, primarily the Rail Belt or Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, communities like in that. So there's not an apples to, it's not an apples to apple comparison, it's kind of apples to oranges. But we're currently undertaking with an independent third party a review of the program, of the renewable energy program, and what the cost benefit has been since the inception of the program for the state. We've used the number of 30 million gallons saved. That is an old number that's been used, and so we're looking for a more updated number, and we'll share that with the legislature when we get it. And we anticipate, we just recently put out a contract for that work, and so we anticipate that we'll have some preliminary numbers in the March time period when we go back to the legislature with this funding request. So I think we can get partially there with this new information of how successful the program has been. And then we will also be sending out our power cost equalization report by community, which also reflects what the cost of fuel is in a community versus what it is with the PCE endowment. Because the one thing to keep in mind, when the PCE endowment was established, the goal of that is that the cost in rural Alaska up to now 750 kilowatts is the same price among the three largest communities, which is Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. And so the floor is 19 cents and the cap is 75 cents. And so in King Cove and Gary mentioning the issue regarding PCE is their cost of power is below 19 cents, and by statute they would not qualify for PCE, which is another issue on into itself. But the goal is to get communities in rural Alaska down to the average cost, and that was the goal. That's the policy of the PCE program.
Right. I understand that. If I could ask it a follow-up a different way, I guess. And it might make sense, if we had all of the analysis, it might make sense to pay down, if you will, the capital in the Power Cost Equalization Fund and get the benefit of the avoided cost. We might come out ahead rather than leaving that in an investment and earning the interest on it. But we can't do the arithmetic on that because we don't have the fundamental information. And then we don't, the other point that the gentleman from King Cove mentioned was that from the village's point of view, it's kind of a break even or maybe even a negative return. But we don't have the information to do the arithmetic on that and make a sensible decision. So I'd like to follow up on that part with you sometime.
Mr. Thayer?
To the chair, we would like to have that conversation and better understand what you're looking for. As far as it, just as a point of reference, the reason the power cost equalization program was established was it was the state's policy to offset those costs to be equal with the urban cities, primarily because the state has invested in infrastructure in urban Alaska, whether that be the Intertie or Bradley Lake or tax credits for Cook Inlet for natural gas. And so the offset for rural Alaska was the power cost equalization program, so they would be on par for their first, like I said, it was 500, now it's 750 kilowatts. The deferred maintenance in rural Alaska, just on their powerhouses and bulk fuel, is $1.1 billion.
Right.
And so that's the type of infrastructure investment in rural Alaska, just for powerhouses and bulk fuel. And then, of course, the renewable energy program allows for, to help offset that with new switchgear and that, to help offset that with renewables. But in some communities, renewables just aren't a viable option, or they're severely limited by their location in the state. There's not a river for hydro, or the sun doesn't shine for 90 days, or the wind blows sometimes not enough or sometimes too much.
Right.
I
understand that. Just comment. So the people living in the North Star Borough today have forgotten why the money was invested in the Intertie in the first place, and we are paying reduced rates. They, understandably, that isn't available to explain to people. And the same thing is that the trade-off, the power cost equalization, was the trade-off for what we were saving in electricity, fundamentally. And then now going forward, we have to invest in alternatives to diesel fuel in the rural areas. And there probably is a positive rate of return in avoided costs. But nobody seems to understand that. So the situation we have in, not everybody, of course, but in the borough, is they kind of resent the money that is going to power cost equalization and not going to the borough. And I think that's unfair, and I think that needs to be explained.
If through the chair, Chris, chair with AEA, to that point, it's a very good point you raised, is because the investment of the Intertie from Willow to Healy saves the Fairbanks community $40 million per year.
Right.
Just the Fairbanks community. The cost of PCE is about $34 million.
Right.
For 81,000 licenses. So that's a very good point. I thank you for raising it.
Yep.
Representative McKay.
Thank you, Chairman Rauscher. And through the chair, I just want to kind of bring us back home here. Basically, today we're being asked to vote on HB 62, if I'm understanding correctly, and we're only being asked to vote on the $1.4 million for FY 2024. Or are we being asked to vote on 10 years, which is over $14 million? And a couple questions I had is I didn't think we could commit future legislatures to expenditures, but maybe this is different. I assume this fund is not sweepable. A few questions there maybe for Representative Edgman.
Representative Edgman,
trying to understand what we're actually here to do today besides
you guys would come to the table.
Debate the huge scope of this thing.
My understanding is that you have some numbers that are in there that don't need to be in. I'm sure these guys will clarify it for you.
Yes, thank you. For the record, Representative Edgman, through the chair to Representative McKay, I think your questions are very good questions. House Bill 62 proposes to reauthorize the renewable energy grant program for 10 years. The programmatic costs, at least in the fiscal year that we're now, are at $1.4 million. But for future years, of course, it's subject to the power of appropriation of the legislature. The legislature could choose to not fund the programmatic aspect of this program or choose to increase it, whatever they want. They could sort of put more money into the program, as we've heard regularly. So hopefully that helps address your questions.
Yeah, follow up. Just so the hit on the budget this year is $1.4
million. Through the chair, Representative McKay, yes, but that's already been embedded in the governor's budget, proposed budget.
In the 7.5?
No, the 7.5 would actually, the cost to run the program through the Alaska Energy Authority, and I'm probably getting ahead of Mr. Thayer here, is through the chair, is in the $1.4 million range, just to administer the program itself, and then actually to get the funding out to the recipients who, at the community level, that's where the $7.5 million comes in.
Representative Esmond, if you'll correct me when I'm finished speaking here, I believe we're not okaying any funding whatsoever. We have some funding that it will cost. All we're doing is re-upping a program that is an existent that needs to happen, continue from now on for another 10 years, I believe. But I believe that's what we're voting on. We're not voting on any money whatsoever.
Can I, Mr. Chairman, you're right in that assessment, but to be technically correct, let's say the program expires at the end of this year, which it would if this bill isn't passed. That programmatic money, as I understand it, the 1.4 would no longer be necessary. Mr. Thayer can opine on that if he feels the need to. So with the passage of this bill, of course, we extend the program, but we also extend the fund itself, and then the programmatic costs that go along with it are extended. And then for, like, not to be super redundant here, but Governor Dunleavy has included those program costs already in his budget that he put out in December.
Representative Esmond, thank you. I just want to say that I believe the budget can actually remove or add more funding here, right?
Oh, yes.
In other words, we're not really okaying any funding whatsoever in this. We realize the funding, but we're just extending a program.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Representative.
I was just going to reiterate, conversely, that if we wanted to squash the program budgetarily, we would just have a decrement of $1.4 million from this line item when it came to the budget bill. So,
okay, thank you.
This is a sunset date extension, and in order to be realistic on the fiscal note, you got to list what it's going to cost to run the program for the 10 years, and that's why it's outlaid like that. That's the only...
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is that clear as mud, Representative? Okay.
I'm not trying to stop anything. I just wondered why there's a fiscal note, but
right.
Apparently that isn't attached to this, but it's here.
It is
attached.
There's always a cost.
What?
So, Mr. Chairman,
the
idea behind the fiscal note and the outlay is that if we extend the sunset date and the receipt authority, that's the expected cost to run the program. But we don't know that until as we fund it and they go through the round 15, round 16, and onward, then that'll tell us what the expected operating budget is. So it's going to cost $1.4 million to run this in the next year. And then The governor's proposing through the amended budget to invest $7.5 million in renewable projects. And so, but that has nothing to do with the legislation from what I understand.
But it was a good question. It was a good awareness, Representative McKay. Thank you for bringing it up. So
if he wants to throw a zero on the $7.5 million, I'd be in favor of that.
See, you can change it. So anyway, what's the will of the committee here on this bill today?
Chairman, I move HB 62 Work Order 33-LS0385/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Are there any questions on the motion? Is there any objections to the motion? We have no amendments. No amendments were given forward. Nobody decided to amend it. So I'm assuming that there's some agreement here. And so if there's no objection.
Don't gamble.
Yeah. On the record.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want me to add ease really quick? Just really quick add ease.
Yeah.
Good.
We're back on the record. So then, without any objection, the motion has carried and it moves out of committee. And I am going to close by saying that the next meeting for this we will convene is on, I don't even have it in front of me somewhere. It'll be next Tuesday at 10:30 in the morning, 10:15 in the morning. And so I'm going to close the meeting. Don't forget, everybody has to hang out and sign the paper. All right. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.